From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Last week, the nation watched and waited as leadership in Washington decided to indefinitely postpone its vote on a health care repeal and replacement package called the American Health Care Act. Few were watching closer than the Florida AARP, which came out fervently against the new plan, calling it an age tax. While that plan is gone for now, AARP leadership in Florida says health care reform is going to come back in one form or another, and the threat to people aged 50 to 64 is not gone, and Florida will see an outsized impact due to its larger number of retirees. We'll talk with AARP leaders about why that demographic in particular needs to stay alert. Plus, dystopian literature is growing in popularity. Sales of the book 1984 jumped by 10,000% in the days following the inauguration, and interest has spilled over into movie theaters. Next week, more than 100 theaters across the country will screen the film version of the George Orwell classic. We'll talk with scholars and the organizers of local screenings about this newfound interest in Big Brother and similar works. But first, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Big Brother is watching you, but on Tuesday, April 4th, at more than 100 movie theaters across the country, including right here in Southwest Florida, you can watch Big Brother. A nationwide movement is screening the dystopian movie based on author George Orwell's 1948 novel at theaters across the nation a week from today. They say it's about freedom and supporting the arts, and we'll talk with local organizers of the screenings and ask literature professors why Orwell's novel and similar works are resonating with readers and movie buffs today. But first, leadership at the AARP breathed a sigh of relief when the health care bill vote was postponed last week. But leaders in Florida say it was only postponed and that it is likely to come back in some form or another. The National and Florida State AARP vocally opposed the last bill, saying that it amounted to an age tax, particularly hurtful to people aged 50 to 64 who are not old enough for Medicare. Florida AARP Executive Director Jeff Johnson says his organization will be focused on any new proposals' impact on that demographic, and joins us now on the phone to talk about health care reform, Washington's budget, and the Florida State Legislature, and how each of the above will affect Floridians over 50. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on, Julie. I appreciate you paying attention to this topic, even as it continues to evolve.
Yeah, it does evolve, and it's going to continue to do so. We are talking about how health care reform might impact the over 50 crowd and what you think needs to be fixed in Congress's next attempt to retool affordable health care. What are your thoughts? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we are at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU, using the hashtag GCL. So, Mr. Johnson, it's been said that Florida would be ground zero for the GOP's proposed health care plan, with over 450,000 of our state's residents aged 50 to 64 facing hundreds or thousands of dollars more every year for health care coverage. Well, that bill's been tabled for now, but more efforts to overhaul our health care system are being worked on. So what specifically did that bill have that would cost retired Floridians so much?
Well, here's the concern. For those who are 65 and over, the vast majority are covered by Medicare. And the bill that was discussed up through last week and is probably not completely dead, it dealt mostly with the under 65 crowd. So those who are, in most cases, still well in the workforce, raising kids, and sometimes taking care of aging parents as well. Our concern is that the way the legislation was crafted, it would have created a significant spike in premiums for the people in that 50 to 64 age range by allowing insurers to charge people up to five times more than a younger person simply based on their age. And that was that age tax that we raised an alarm about. And at the same time, there was a shift in the way that the premiums would be supported with either subsidies under the current law, the Affordable Care Act, or under refundable tax credits under the proposal. And in that process, the subsidies for those who are moderate income and lower income, older people, would have diminished significantly. So on the one hand, higher premiums, on the other hand, less help. And that made for a perfect storm that we thought would have really left hundreds of thousands of Floridians struggling to pay for their insurance premiums, likely losing their insurance, and as a result, really burdening the rest of our healthcare system.
So there are two things. First, that act was going to allow health insurance companies to charge older Americans five times what they charge others for the same coverage. And then the second part would boost premiums further because it's replacing the current law's premium tax credits with a flat tax credit. So that's how that continues to hurt?
Well, exactly. So currently, if you are somebody of moderate income, let's say you're making $20,000, $30,000 a year, then you're getting a subsidy to help cover the cost of your insurance premiums. In the new system, the change would have been to a flat rate based primarily on age and also on income. But unfortunately, the formula that they were using was one that would not have made up the difference for those who were in their 50s and 60s. So the Congressional Budget Office looked nationally. They didn't have Florida-specific statistics, but estimated that there would be about 24 million people who would be covered under the current law who would not have coverage in this new bill were it to pass. And again, we saw the majority of those being those who are older, who are in 40s, 50s, and 60s.
So the Kaiser Family Foundation's website calculated an average premium cost comparing the current Affordable Care Act to the proposed plan. And I'm going to put some real live numbers on here for you and for the listeners. I looked it up for a 40-year-old at $30,000 in income. I'm looking at these numbers. I was like, well, you know, Lee County, it goes up $1,100 a year. That's 45% increase. In Collier, it goes down $60 a year. That's 2% decrease. In Hendry, it goes up $500. Charlotte, up $1,000. I'm like, you know, yeah, that does go up. But then I was, oh, wait, I'm at the 40-year-old. Let me see what the 60-year-old is at $30,000 in each of these counties. In Lee County, it goes up $12,000. $12,320. That's up 497%. In Collier County, it raises the premium to $8,990 over the course of a year. That's a 362% increase. In Hendry County, it's $10,600 increase. That's a 428% increase. Charlotte County, $6,000. It gets higher. That's a 242% increase. And in Manatee County, it goes $5,450 higher, which is a 219% increase. So when you look at the difference in how much premiums are going to increase between a 40-year-old and a 60-year-old earning $60,000 in these different counties, it's really a, those are staggering numbers.
Well, that's right. And when we went back to really 10 years ago when we were talking about the importance of affordability of health insurance for those in their 50s and 60s before the Affordable Care Act, we heard horror stories that sound pretty similar to what we're hearing right now as people crunch those numbers, as you just did from the Kaiser Family Foundation, where people in at that era were either completely unable to get insurance at all because insurers at that time were allowed to just not write policies for people with pre-existing conditions, or if they could get coverage, it was, again, tens of thousands of dollars in insurance premiums that they just didn't have the money to cover. So they were uninsured, which meant when they made it to 65 and were eligible for Medicare, they came into the Medicare program with a lot more to take care of that they had not been able to address earlier, and in many cases had advanced farther along if it was a chronic disease. So that actually does end up burdening the Medicare system somewhat as well. So you've got the double whammy of people who are in their 50s and 60s who are, again, essential parts of our workforce, essential parts of our communities, who don't have the health coverage that they need. And then you also add an extra layer of impact onto the Medicare system when those folks finally do have access to insurance and are taking advantage of it.
So I want to see if you – can you tell me a little bit more about this critical demographic of 50 to 65. They're not generally retired at this point, but they can be. What kind of insurance are these people depending on now since they're too young for Medicare?
Right. No, it's a good point. And it's been interesting because as an organization, when we were founded, we were called the American Association of Retired Persons. But as an organization whose membership starts at 50, we realized pretty early on that we actually cover or have as members many people who are not retired and some who never plan to retire. So we've switched to just AARP. In that 50 to 64-year-old range, and you can the 64 number tends to be fairly hard because, again, Medicare eligibility is 65. But the 50 can be a little bit fungible. So there are certainly people in their mid-40s, late-40s who have issues with insurance costs, too. If you get your insurance through an employer, that tends not to change much. Obviously, the Affordable Care Act did change some elements of employer-based insurance, but particularly in a place like Florida, where the economy is so strongly driven by small businesses and by individuals who are entrepreneurs who are not able to purchase a group health insurance plan, the reliance on some sort of individual or small group market is essential, and it was a real problem in Florida before the Affordable Care Act. And for those folks now, many of them are purchasing their insurance through the ACA Health Exchange and have said, I've talked to several who've said, I never would be able to afford insurance otherwise, or they've said, I was working in a job I hated, but I worked there because they had health insurance. And because I could purchase health insurance on the individual market after the Affordable Care Act, I was enabled to go out on my own and do what I always wanted to do, do what I knew I was good at. So from an economic engine perspective and an economic driver perspective, we believe that having a stable health insurance market for individuals and small groups in that 50 to 60 range, 50 to 64 range, is really an essential piece of allowing people to become the entrepreneur that they may have always wanted to be.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was looking at numbers for Florida just last week about the number of individual entrepreneurs that have no employees or maybe one possibly. It's a big number. It seems like a lot of people come down here, retire, and decide to go back to work with their expertise that they brought down to the state. Mm-hmm. We have a caller.
It covers a whole range, too. I mean, I'll tell you that I've talked to individuals who do just that, that came down here in many cases from the north and particularly on the West Coast from the Midwest. And they decided they want to continue to work part-time. So they do consulting of some sort or another, and it helps pay the bills, and it gives them a focus of a way to stay active and involved in their community, and puts a little money in their pocket. And it's just enough to be able to cover things like health insurance premiums.
Yeah. We have a call coming in from Fort Myers. This is Marcus on the line. Marcus, what would you like to say?
Thank you very much. Well, first I'd like to say that I'm a lifelong Republican. I first voted for President Reagan years ago and all the way through. But the real issue here is, what's really wrong with Obamacare? If you look at it carefully, the only thing that's wrong with it is that it's costing too much. And what really is wrong with it is all because Republican senators made Obama give away the public option. They made Obama let the insurance companies charge ridiculously high rates. And they also made Obama... Joe Lieberman was the one who was independent at the time. He said, well, there was a 55-year-old public option where you could buy into Medicare. And Joe Lieberman said, well, I represent the great state of Connecticut where all these insurance companies are based, so I can't vote for the plan. And everybody took turns holding Obama hostage. And all these problems with Obamacare were because my Republican Party and Joe Lieberman, the independent, put these problems in there. They're the ones who put the poison pills in the ticking time bomb. The only negatives came from my party and from Joe Lieberman. And what is the real problem we keep hearing? We've got to get rid of this terrible system. There is no terrible system. What there was a jealousy by my party of action, because no Republican took action forever, and the jealousy of success, because 25 million plus are now insured. So what now needs to happen is, of course they won't, but they need to put the party differences aside and just fix it. Make it affordable, put in a public option, and restore that 55, and this year I'm actually 55, restore that ability for people who are 55 like me to buy into Medicare at a reasonable rate. I think it was $155. Okay, so what is the real big picture? The big picture is Obamacare isn't really a problem, but it was made a problem through propaganda by my party, and now it needs to be fixed. And this is all coming to fruition. I'd love to hear your guest comments on that. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Jeff, I wanted to ask you a question, and I was going to ask it a little later, but this kind of gets me to the point of, How does your membership view the current situation with health care, particularly in Florida, and what would the Florida AARP like to see changed or different for that segment there in that 50 to 64?
Sure, and of course our membership, just like your listeners, is a politically diverse one, so you get folks across the political spectrum. All of them have the concern that your caller just referenced, which is it costs too much. Premiums, deductibles, copays are always a concern. And so just as we have heard many, many stories from people who have benefited from the ability to purchase insurance at all because of the Affordable Care Act, you do hear, but it costs too much. And sometimes you hear there's not as much competition for my business among insurance companies as I would like. what we'd like to say is, again, echoing what your caller said, let's figure out something that we can work across party lines to address. And I'm not sure that the overall Affordable Care Act redo, if you will, is going to be that place. It may be prescription drug costs, because when we talk to people about what it is that's driving their costs, often the cost of prescription drugs are a significant factor. And I know that's something that the Trump administration has expressed some interest in. It's something that I know he is connected with members on the other side of the aisle in the House to discuss. And that may be the first opportunity to do something on healthcare that is truly bipartisan in nature, because it is something that is felt across the board.
We are talking about healthcare reform, and particularly as it impacts people over the age of 50, with the executive director of the Florida AARP, Jeff Johnson. You can become part of the conversation, too, by calling 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU, using the hashtag of GCL. We have another caller on the line. This is Elaine from Fort Myers. Elaine, what would you like to say?
I want to thank the AARP for highlighting the tax-shifting function of the proposed Brian Trump health care plan. I was unaware that they were doing away with the tax upon the richest Americans that helped fund Obamacare originally, as well as loading up the plan with fat incentives for the insurance company. It's my understanding there was a $500,000 tax break specific to insurance executives as a sweetener to get them to accept the plan.
Mr. Johnson?
We didn't really focus heavily on that clause that would not limit the salaries of insurance executives, though I have seen folks point that out. I do want to say, too, though, as we think about our membership more broadly, one of the areas that this legislation would have done significant damage to, I would argue, and make significant changes to, is the Medicaid program. And a lot of people don't think about AARP members as being vitally concerned with Medicaid unless you have had a loved one who's needed long-term care, in which case you realize that the ability to pay for nursing home care will exhaust the savings of the vast majority of Floridians, at which point their primary option is Medicaid coverage for long-term care, for nursing home care. And at the same time, folks in Florida recognize, as they do across the country, that they'd really prefer to be able to stay in their home as long as possible. They just sometimes needed a little bit of help. And there are some state-level programs that do allow people to stay at home by providing some help with chore services, with home-delivered meals, with help around the house, if you will. And it's possible for Medicaid to be used to fund more of that home and community-based long-term care rather than more exclusively nursing home care. Florida is actually not the best when it comes to that balance of spending money on nursing home care versus helping people stay independent at home. Our concern is that had this legislation gone through, much of the money that was going to be recouped by the federal government was by cutting Medicaid, cutting the amount of money that the federal government put into Medicaid. And in a state like Florida, where there is such a significant population that needs long-term care or will need long-term care in the decades to come, the idea that the federal government would be kind of off the hook and it would be up to the state to figure out how to care for people is a pretty scary thought. And even though this bill is currently, I guess, on hiatus, we're also watching to see what at the state level in Tallahassee, which is currently in legislative session, the leadership there has in mind in terms of the future of Medicaid as it relates to long-term care.
What kind of things are on the table at the state level right now?
Well, several years ago, the state enacted a plan that was initially championed by then-Governor Jeb Bush, but really not enacted until our current governor, Rick Scott, that pushed all of those who needed Medicaid into managed care. And on the acute care side, there's a pretty significant track record of managed care. I think many of us who've had employer-based health care have dealt with managed care over the years. But in long-term care, there's not as much experience at it, and really not that many companies who know how to really manage the care of somebody who has proven to need the sorts of help with activities of daily living like getting dressed and going to the bathroom and cooking and feeding, that that qualifies for long-term care. And so at this early stage, it's not yet been proven whether this is something that ends up saving the state money or affects the care of residents in a positive or negative way. We have heard some kind of anecdotal evidence of concern that the managed care companies are not quite as, I guess, patient-focused or individual-focused as the organizations, many of them nonprofit, that provided long-term care before this advent of Medicaid managed care. So we're continuing to follow that, and I think we have some concern that the state has discussed pursuing a waiver or permission from the federal government to simply give people in the acute care side of Medicaid a voucher, if you will, to then let them go purchase whatever health insurance they can afford with that voucher. And we have some grave concerns about what that would look like if they tried to transfer that over to long-term care where that market doesn't even really exist.
So the AARP basically, I mean, you work a lot based on the feedback of your membership, correct?
We do. We're surveying the field a lot and just try to keep our ear to the ground.
And I'm curious, what kind of feedback did you get from your membership when this new bill was being floated? Did people kind of who had complained before about Obamacare, did they come out with a difference of opinion?
A little bit of a mix, actually. I mean, there are people who are just in their depths of their being do not like the notion of the Affordable Care Act and want to see it go away. That's what we saw, on Friday when the bill fell apart. One of the reasons they couldn't pass it were members of the House Freedom Caucus that refused to support the bill, not because of the cuts and changes to coverage that were there, but the fact that it left most of the structure of the Affordable Care Act still in place. Some of those folks are AARP members, and we certainly listen to them. At the same time, have a number of folks who have come to rely on the Affordable Care Act for their insurance and who have said, you know, I wasn't that crazy about the idea when it went through Congress, but I realize how important it is to me now, and I realize that whatever happens, I need to make sure that I continue to have coverage and that this is anything that changes it makes it better, not worse. And they were seeing it getting worse.
So now this particular act failed. It didn't make it to a vote. But do you see it resurfacing in D.C. later this year or before the midterm elections in 2018? And if so, do you think that they will try to put those what your organization called an age tax? Do you think they'll try to keep that in there?
I think the first of all, I think I'm not qualified to predict the future.
I know. I don't want to get your crystal ball out.
However, I think as late as this weekend, we heard from leaders in the House that they were going to come back around to this at some point along the way. And I think that in order to accommodate much of what they want to do in their overall legislative agenda, they need something to happen in health care that they can use to free up tax dollars for other purposes. And at the same time, I think for many of the folks who have run for election a number of cycles on the promise of repealing the Affordable Care Act, repealing Obamacare, they feel, I suspect, some urgency to do that before they go back before the voters who put them in office in many cases with that as an express reason. So, sure, we do expect to see it again. In the meantime, one of the things that we're also very focused on is whether Congress decides to shift attention to look at Medicare or look at Social Security as a way to, again, extract money that can be used for other parts of the agenda like tax reform. Because as apprehensive as people were in that 50 to 64 range about the potential of losing health coverage, 10 times more have we heard from people who are concerned about the prospect that Medicare might be changed in a way that, again, puts the individual consumer more at the front line in terms of having insecurity about what their health care will cost. There's been, as I mentioned, vouchers in Medicaid at the state level as a possibility. There have been discussions about doing the same thing with the Medicare program federally rather than the current system, which has the defined benefits of Medicare Part B, and with Medicare Advantage as a as an opportunity to compete with Part B, sort of like the public option that your first caller talked about, were Medicare to be turned into a voucher system where people were just given a voucher that they could use on the private insurance market, I can tell you that AARP members would be extremely concerned about what that might mean for their ability to cover their own health expenses as they age.
It's kind of hard to avoid frightful speculation, and I hope you didn't feel like I was trying to ask you to predict what Congress is going to do. But there are a lot of concerns right now for older Americans as the president's budget's been made public. I mean, it still has to make it through Congress, which is the real author of the budget. But what in particular stands out as a concern for the AARP from the budget that's been put forward?
Sure. You know, and thank you for pointing out, because I know in the immediate aftermath, there was a lot of hand-wringing about the budget that the president's administration put up. And there were some concerns we had. I mean, there's a community service block grant program, which did get a lot of attention because some communities use it to supplement the funding of Meals on Wheels. And I will say, it's not the primary source of funding for Meals on Wheels. And I think in a lot of the immediate aftermath, it sort of got misrepresented as the primary source of Meals on Wheels funding. But it does make us concerned that when the complete budget comes out from the White House, and more importantly, because it's the Congress that actually enacts a budget, as they go through the process, that programs like Meals on Wheels are protected. But it's also something that you'd think of less here in Florida, but the LIHEAP program, which is a low-income home energy assistance program, which people think of primarily as heating, though actually it serves energy concerns more globally. That's a big issue for those where you need power to keep your medical devices running, or you need power for air conditioning when it's 98 degrees and humid here.
Yeah,
and there's also a community service employment program that we have concerns about, and nurse training and physician training. A lot of those things that were in that what's called a skinny budget, because it didn't include all of the programs that the federal government funds, that were zeroed out by the White House, were ones that we think are really important for helping particularly vulnerable older people. And we want to see what happens in the full budget. And also, one assumes that a budget is also an indication of priorities. And we have concerns if the administration truly doesn't think those are important programs.
So what is the AARP doing right now to work with lawmakers? I would imagine that you're in D.C., but what kind of things are you trying to do to convince lawmakers not to slash these programs, and also to keep an eye on that 50 to 64 group as they start planning health care reform in the future?
Sure. Well, you know, you mentioned earlier that we are an organization that is driven significantly by the input of our members. And we believe that members of Congress in their own way are in the same boat. And so we are constantly looking for ways to help AARP members and others who are concerned about these issues connect with their member of Congress. When we certainly do have an office in Washington, D.C., and we have folks who will go on the Hill and meet with congressional staffers, but we've always found it more meaningful when they hear from constituents in their own community. And so whether that's through toll-free numbers that people can use to call their congressional office, or really, we often have a network of volunteers who go meet with members of Congress when they're home on recess, just to lay out the AARP priorities on particular issues and to hear what that particular member of Congress is looking to do that we ought to be engaged on. So while, yes, there is a national lobbying effort, the bulk of the work that we do is really about connecting with AARP members and community and identifying ways that we can work together to influence folks locally.
And it's interesting because there's been such a surge in activism, and usually when people think of that, they think of young people marching, but have you seen a surge in activism with people within AARP on a local level?
Yeah, totally have. And I think that we have seen we're in a time of heightened political activism across the board. And so, yes, we've seen people much more eager to be a part of what AARP is doing, as well as pushing AARP to be more aggressively a part of the causes that they have. And particularly when those causes are ones that are right at the center of what life for somebody in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond is things like the health insurance, whether through the Affordable Care Act or Medicare, long-term care, either for yourself or for your parents, financial stability in Social Security or retirement savings programs. Those are things that we've been working with a much louder and larger body of active members than in years in the recent past.
That's got to be an interesting time for you, too, hearing from all of them. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now. I want to thank our guest, Executive Director of the Florida Trust, today and explain kind of how things were, how they could have been, and how they might be in the future. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on. Maybe we can do it again down the road.
Yeah, well, we probably will because, as we mentioned, it's probably going to be coming back. Thank you so much. Coming up, the dystopian classic 1984 is flying off bookshelves and landing in local movie theaters. We'll have a discussion next about the newfound interest in the tales of Big Brother and Newspeak. Coming up next.